This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Now we turn to some lived experience and our service systems to talk more about what we can do to support people, keeping with our theme of aging. And I'd like to welcome our moderator of our next panel, Megan Satanovich, who is a research coordinator at the Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics. She received her BS in human biology from Stanford University, where she competed on the women's rowing team. And prior to working as a research coordinator, she worked at the Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics as an interim executive editor of the American Journal of Bioethics. In her current role, she leads IDD Transform, a community-based participatory research project aimed at improving health and health care for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Her work has addressed issues such as emergency medicine, COVID-19 related impacts on mental health, and experiences with aging and Alzheimer's for individuals with Down syndrome. She's passionate about applying her skills in community engagement and qualitative research to advance health equity for individuals with developmental disabilities. So she will moderate our panel. Thank you so much. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Dr. Kripke, for that introduction. I am honored and excited to be here with you all today and to moderate this panel titled Resources in California for People with Developmental Disabilities Living with Aging Parents. And I'd really like to start off by thanking Dr. Belova and Dr. Heller for their excellent presentations and really for setting the stage for this panel today, where we'll hear more from families and from some professionals about this topic. So I wanted to kick off today with a question, and that question is, as people with developmental disabilities live longer than ever before, how do we prepare for a future where both they and their caregivers are aging? So this is the issue our panelists will be exploring today. First, you'll hear from a parent of an individual with developmental disabilities, and she will share her experiences, her emotions, and challenges navigating long-term planning for her daughter. And then you will hear from two representatives from California Regional Centers who will share resources to support families with this long-term planning process. And we're going to end the conversation with Q&A, so we encourage audience members to put any questions you have in the Q&A throughout the event. So we hope that you leave this session today with some practical strategies, either as a caregiver or family member, or as a healthcare provider, to help plan for aging, caregiver succession, and long-term support. So with that, I'm pleased to introduce our first panelist, Dr. Colette Pat. Dr. Pat is the parent of adult children, including an adult with disabilities, and is speaking in that capacity at this conference. In her professional life, Dr. Pat is the Assistant Dean for Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Access at the Mathematical and Physical Sciences Division at the University of California, Berkeley. She received her BA in English and Women's Studies in 1985 and her PhD in Social and Cultural Studies and Education at UC Berkeley in 1995. Her scholarly work focuses on academia and its social context, student postdoctoral and faculty development and success, and organizational and institutional change. So with that, I would like to hand it over to Colette for her presentation.
Hi, everybody. I hope I can be heard. And I believe someone will be moving the slides, so I'll just say next when it's time for the next slide. I am indeed the mom of a developmentally disabled young adult. And she's the one in the middle between her two moms, and I'm the one on the left with the big mouth. Next slide, please. These are my kids. And when parenting a developmentally disabled kid, You have a lifetime of joy, just like parenting any other kid. Next slide. And you also encounter a lot of new challenges, challenges that are quite different than what you encounter with your typically developing kids. Next slide, please. Plus, from the time that you know, at least in my case, in my family's case, from the time that we knew that we would have a DD kid, we started to understand that there was a huge monster under the bed. And that monster is what will become of my kid when they become an adult? How will I care for my kid when they're an adult and I'm aging and my health does not enable me to do that? And how will they thrive or even survive after I die, given my role as a caregiver? Next slide, please. Many parents worry about their adult kid's future, regardless of anything else about the kid. But for the parents of DD kids, and I'm using DD developmentally disabled in the broad sense to also include intellectual disabilities and cognitive disabilities and so on. But for the parents of a DD kid, who becomes an adult, there are other considerations. There are the ongoing things of everyday medication, specialized medicine, noticing behaviors or what's happening with your adult child that may not be instantly recognizable to someone else as not their normal, but something is wrong. Dental care, I don't even want to get into dental care today. I'm so upset about dental care. The advocacy that's needed, sometimes legal action, what will happen with your DD kid as they become an adult in terms of their social well-being and isolation, their work, their creative life, their contribution to society, recreation, and self-care, and above all, that monster under the bed. Who will do this? Who will ensure this happens? Who will monitor all of this? Next slide, please. And then there are other considerations that are not the typical considerations you might have for a typically developing adult child, like housing. Where will my kid live without me when they're an adult? How will I afford to set them up with what they need? What's the relationship between public benefits, which are quite limited, and whatever resources I may or may not have, which also might be quite limited? Familiarity, what will they need as they age, and who will understand them? Safety, how do I ensure that yes, we maybe can get caregivers, but will those caregivers treat them with dignity and kindness and not neglect, abuse, or harm them? And who will watch out for them? Who will monitor this? Who will ensure this? Next slide, please. So maybe there are answers. We've heard a lot about different services and different availability of services and resources today, and I appreciate all of them. And I want to say every single resource that my family gets is fantastic, and that any family gets is fantastic. And the people who deliver them are pretty amazing people. There are regional centers, there's federal and state benefits that we heard about in terms of housing. There are accounts that you can set up. There are different approaches to how you approach decision making for your DD adult kid. In relation to the judicial system and so on. And there are also nonprofit organizations that help. We heard so much about that today, and I loved hearing about all of it. And some of these resources are incredible. Some of them are really useful. Some of them, quite honestly, exist only on paper. And then there are many resources that do not yet exist. And frankly, when you're the person coordinating all of this, it can be absolutely head spinning that each of these resources might have to be managed separately, might have to be vetted separately, might have to be established separately, that there's communication with many different state and federal agencies and different kinds of people that you have to interact with, each on its own time scale, each requiring its own documentation, coordination, and monitoring. And you know that as the parent and the caregiver, and then you ask, when I'm gone, who will do this? Who will do this? Okay, next slide, please. And so maybe those are answers, and in some cases they really are, and in some cases they aren't, because the bureaucracy is so overwhelming. The public resources are really quite limited. Some things have extremely long wait lists. We heard about that, sometimes extending beyond the life of an individual. There's a issue with care and who gives the care and what they're paid and whether they're adequately paid for the kind of complex care that they have to give. And I do want to point out that coordination is a real issue because 99% success with this is not sufficient, because the day that someone doesn't show up and the DD adult has a seizure or falls down and can't call 911 themselves, who is there to take care of that if there's been some lapse in care? So 99% efficiency sounds great, and it's not enough. There's a new system called Coordinated Family Support, which is new, and I'm so happy it exists, and it still has to be tested, though. So I want to point that out. Next slide, please. Why are there problems with this? I think we already heard a lot about that, so I don't want to go into too much detail about it. But basically, once a DD kid hits adulthood at 18, 22, so on, 26, when it comes to, health insurance, they hit a cliff. And the current system for DD adults, from my perspective as a parent, is fragmented, it's under-resourced, and it doesn't consider optimizing the DD adult experience. It considers providing, at best, reaching minimum standards with inadequate resources. The services are often managed locally, so even a move, which we did, for example, from San Francisco to Oakland, requires starting over with different agencies. There are a non-coherent set of federal, states, and local laws, rules, and services, and these also change over time, as we've been hearing. Next slide, please. I want to ask you to just imagine what our world could look like for DD adults. In what could Just imagine how it could look different. And I've suggested a few things, some of these adapted from someone whose work I really love, Moish Tov, who has a nonprofit organization called JoyDo. And what if our medical and dental care were actually coordinated, didn't require constant battles with insurers and so on? What if our housing models actually were specifically designed for autistic adults, for DD or ID adults? What if we had meaningful tools to really identify the skills and the interests of DD adults and ID adults and people who are nonverbal, and appropriate and accessible and effective ways to provide education and skill development? If we thought about rewarding, satisfying, meaningful, and challenging workplace environments, structured systems for that of that were social and avoided lifelong isolation. I want to point out that, I'm aging myself. I'm not as young as I was in the portrait my daughter drew in the first slide. But there's really far less difference in age between a 25-year-old and a 5-year-old than one might imagine, because if in both cases the longest span of their lifetime is still ahead of them, and yet a 5-year-old gets more coordinated care than a 25-year-old, and that does not make any sense for our society. So next slide, please. So what can healthcare providers do? I want to say, you guys are amazing. I'm so happy and grateful you're here. First and foremost, provide the world-class health, medical, and dental care that you are qualified to provide, and do not compromise at all with your DD, ID, and cognitively impaired patients. That's the most valuable thing that you can give us. Please give it to us. Refer to resources. Thank you for coming today to find out about them. If you know about them, please refer. Your advocacy, I can't even tell you how many times advocacy has saved my daughter's life, literally, and my sanity. Your advocacy from health providers is unbelievably important. Please do not hold back on it. Your sensitivity, be aware that there may be a lot of services. They may not be coherent. They may not be comprehensive. And there isn't really a social safety net. And then speak up for better infrastructure and resources for DD adults. And do not ever underestimate how influential your voice is. Next slide, please. Okay, a very big thank you. And also to my co-parent, who was the other figure in the portrait at the first slide, and also a huge debt of gratitude to the incredible doctors and healthcare providers and dentists who have taken care of my daughter through her lifetime, and almost all of them at UCSF. So thank you so much. That's it from me.
Thanks so much, Colette. You're getting a lot of hearts and claps and thumbs up in the chat. So I think so thank you so much for sharing your experience. I'm sure it resonates with a lot of people on the call, particularly other family members and caregivers. I really loved when you ex talk describe the situation as the monster under the bed. I think it just really shows kind of the depth of the emotions that come with thinking about this process for your child. So, with that, I would like to transition it to our next two speakers from California Regional Centers. And first, we have Zoraida Preciado, and she is Associate Director at the San Gabriel slash Pomona Regional Center, where she oversees the Adult and Residential Department. She brings nearly 20 years of experience supporting individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities with progressive roles, including service coordinator, manager, and associate director. In her current role, Zoraida provides oversight of adult and residential units, including a newly established unit serving individuals age 60 and older, ensuring effective aging-related service planning, continuity of care, and responsive supports. And after Zoraida, we will hear from Michelle Johnson, who is the Director of Client Services at the Alta California Regional Center, where she oversees adult and residential services and leads agency-wide initiatives focused on aging and long-term supports for individuals with developmental disabilities. With more than 30 years of experience in the developmental disabilities field and over 19 years at Alta California Regional Center, Michelle brings deep expertise in service delivery, systems leadership, and person-centered practices. Her work is grounded in advancing quality of care, strengthening community partnerships, and promoting equity and inclusion for individuals and families across the lifespan. So thank you both for being here. And Zoraida, I will pass it to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Megan. Hello, everyone. So I'll start my presentation by giving an overview of regional centers, and then I'll be passing it on to Michelle, who will provide you with some information of a few of our services that we provide for our eligible adults that regional centers support. Next. Okay. So what is regional center? What do we do? What do we provide? What is the purpose? So here in California, regional center is overseen by the Department of Developmental Services, also known as DDS. And there's 21 regional centers throughout the state. And each regional center provides services within its own geographic area. But the main purpose, the main goal of regional center is to provide supports to individuals with intellectual and developmental disability by assisting them in accessing services in the community. Regional center does not provide all services directly. What regional center does do, they reach out to community partners, to generic resources, or to regional center vendors to coordinate services, and it's them who provide the direct services to the individual served by regional centers. Another big part of regional center is to help our individuals served in developing the individual program plan. That's also known as the IPP, and that's a written agreement between regional center and individual. It's more of the like the who, the what, the when, like what services are going to be provided, who's going to be providing it, when are they going to be providing it. And this document also outlines the individual goals and services and supports that they need. Next. So how does someone become eligible for regional center services? So eligibility is determined through regional center through a diagnosis and assessment process. The disability must begin before the age of 18, and it must be expected to continue indefinitely and cause a substantial disability. The diagnoses include intellectual disability, autism, cerebral palsy, and epilepsy. And other conditions that also qualify are those that are closely related to intellectual disability, or someone that might have a condition that might need the same support and services as someone with intellectual disability. I know today we're focusing on aging, but I do want to mention that regional center also has provisional eligibility, which is for our kiddos from birth to age 4. They do not need to have a formal diagnosis. As long as they show a significant developmental delay, they would be eligible for regional center services under the provisional eligibility. And again, this is for individuals from birth to age 4. Next. So how do you access services with regional center? The first step is always a referral. And a referral can be a self-referral. It could be done by a family member, a friend, someone in the community. We even get referrals from hospitals, doctors, schools, churches, etc. So that would be the first start to initiate that access regional center services. Once that referral is started, it then goes on to your intake and application process. And this is more of a formal process where a regional center will gather more information. And once that information is gathered, the eligibility team with each regional center will meet to then do an eligibility assessment. If the individual is found to be eligible for regional center services, then the person will be assigned a service coordinator. And then again, we'll work together to develop that IPP or that individual program plan. Next. And who to contact at regional center? If you're already receiving services at regional center, your first point of contact will always be that service coordinator. That will be the person who will assist you in coordinating services, who will meet with you to develop your IPP, who you will contact for any questions, any services that you might need. It always starts with the service coordinator. If you have any questions or you cannot reach your service coordinator, then you definitely want to reach out to that manager or that supervisor. Each regional center has a different communication pathway. So you definitely want to reach out to your service coordinator and ask what that communication pathway looks like. If you do not receive services from regional center, but you're interested in learning more about regional center and the Developmental Disability Services Department, we really encourage you to reach out to DDS. We'll be providing the links at the end of our presentation. Or you could also reach out to your local regional center so that we could provide you with the information that you need. And that is my overview of regional center. So at this time, I'll be passing on to Michelle. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Michelle Johnson with Alta California Regional Center. And I'm going to talk about services that are commonly accessed by individuals who are aging in place at home. Independent Living Services, also known as ILS, is a service that can help an individual maintain their independence. This is a service provided in the home and in the community. What does it look like? The service generally begins with an assessment to meet the individual in their home environment and to assess their needs and to determine the amount of support that is necessary to meet their goals. This slide depicts areas that ILS may assist with. They can assist an individual with learning how to budget their money. They can assist with reviewing mail, paying monthly bills, shopping for food or household items, doing price comparisons in a store setting, reading food or cleaning product labels. They may also assist an individual, by individual, I mean the person served. They may help the individual learn how to prepare meals using the stove or oven. Perhaps the individual needs some type of assistance with scheduling medical or dental appointments. ILS can assist the individual by calling the insurance to find a local medical or dental provider, or assistance with navigating their community. ILS may also help the individual with advocacy. ILS services are individualized and they're flexible to meet the needs of the individual. Next slide. Okay, Coordinated Family Support Services, also known as CFS, is designed for adults who choose to live with their families. The service was created in 2022 in response to input from families about the lack of available services for individuals who choose to live in the family home. What do services look like? Typically, they begin with an assessment in the home environment to assess the individual's needs. Services are individualized and flexible to meet the individual and the family need. Services are designed to help adults and families with identifying the support necessary for the individual to be successful in their home. Perhaps the individual may need some overnight support. CFS, Coordinated Family Support Services, can help with accessing in-home support services or other types of generic services. They can also help coordinate training of the staff that work with the individual within the home. They can develop, as an example, a calendar for service delivery. They can help with identifying transportation options in the community. They can also help with identifying backup providers or plans. The service can help with planning for the future so that everyone knows what the individual wants to happen if their living situation were to change. Supports provided through Coordinated Family Supports are provided in a manner that is respectful of the culture, ethnicity, and linguistic preferences of the individual and their family. Next slide. Personal assistance services is designed to assist individuals with completing activities of daily living, feeding, bathing, dressing, mobility assistance, when generic services are not available. This is a direct assistance, meaning this is a hands-on type of service. The service may be provided in the home or in the community, and it also generally begins with an assessment to identify individual need. Next slide. Okay, the previous slides describe services that individuals who are aging in place typically access. It is important to also mention that regional centers offer an array of services to support other life areas, such as employment, assistance with identifying supports for housing, day services like paid internships, job coaching, integrated employment, residential placement, behavioral intervention services, respite, advocacy, and the list goes on. Self-determination is not a service, but an individual can choose to have their services delivered through the self-determination program. Reach out to your regional center coordinator for more information. This slide highlights a new California law for individuals who reside in the family home. The law states before the individual's 22nd birthday, there needs to be a discussion about a caregiver succession plan if the individual determines it is necessary. What is a caregiver succession plan? A plan that identifies who will provide the care when the current caregiver is no longer able. The caregiver succession plan will also identify housing options when the consumer, the individual served, can no longer live at home. The plan should be documented in the individual's IPP or individual program plan. Individuals have an IPP that are served by regional centers. Typically, this plan is reviewed annually. And there is a little checkbox on page 5 of the IPP that has a box for the caregiver succession plan discussion. Next slide. This page highlights some of the additional resources. There are links to the statewide map of regional centers. There's a link to the contact information for regional centers. There's a link to services and also a link to the new standardized individual program plan that has information about caregiver succession plan.
Thanks so much, Michelle and Zoraida, for that really informative presentation. I think it's very helpful to hear about the resources available after hearing Colette's experience as a parent. So I wanted to start this Q&A by anchoring the discussion in some of the challenges that Colette described with long waiting lists and navigating the bureaucracy and just some of the things that come up for caregivers as they're trying to navigate this system. So this first question is for Zoraida and Michelle. And so from your perspective, what strategies have been most helpful for families in overcoming these challenges, like the ones Colette described, and how can regional centers support the families in the process?
This is Michelle, and it's really important to contact your regional center coordinator, make them aware of the current situation or the issue at hand. As a parent or individual served, you can request a planning team meeting to discuss the issue and ask the regional center, how can they help you? Is there a service or a support that can help?
Thanks, Michelle. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
No, I agree with Michelle. I think, like I mentioned, the conversation starts with your service coordinator. And if there is a service or something that the family or the individual is requesting and that cannot meet those needs, we do have a due process as well that they could request and we could provide. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
I would also add that regional centers often have relationships with community partners liaisons. There's system of care MOUs that we have with our community partners. And so, you know, these can become resources when we hear that our families are, you know, being challenged with the with navigating another system, a service system. We can rely on our relationships and liaisons to help us provide information to the family to hopefully help resolve their challenge.
Thank you. That's a great point. So my next question, Colette, you mentioned some of the challenges that you've had with healthcare providers. And this is a question for all the panelists here, but maybe Colette, you could start is, what do you think healthcare providers need to understand about the regional center system to be able to better support patients with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their aging caregivers?
That's a great question. And I think probably my co-panelists can answer that even better than I can. But I think just understanding that there are services, you know, the services that exist are great. And where they're great, they are great. And to be able to refer to those services and, you know, a caregiver has a lot of things that they're dealing with. Often they're dealing with medical concerns and behavioral concerns and social concerns and all of this at the same time. And they may or may not have the time, or they may or may not have the capacity to find out everything that is available. And also new things become available, some things disappear and so on. So being able to refer to known resources is really important.
Absolutely, thank you. Anything else to add, Zoraida or Michelle?
I think it would be important for healthcare providers to know that regional centers exist, and that, you know, we can be their partner in providing services and supports to individuals. We do a lot of education and outreach so that we can build those relationships with the healthcare, the local healthcare providers and the hospitals in our area. I think it also helps them to know who we are. And then obviously they see a lot of individuals from the community, and should there be someone that presents, you know, at their facility, they know how to make referrals to our center so that we can, you know, go through the eligibility process and then see if we can serve that individual for long-term.
And I'd just like to add to that, I think it's important that, that our professionals know that, you know, sometimes the individual that we serve may require additional support, additional assistance. So it's not one, you know, one solution fits all. It's not, it really need to be flexible and think outside the box on how we could support each individual, because every individual's needs is different. So I think that's really important for a community that's supporting our individuals to know that, that it's not one size fits all when it comes to supporting our individuals that we serve.
Thank you all. And we have a lot of great questions in the Q&A. I'm going to start with one. So this person asks, what kinds of supports are available for adults with IDD who have never had regional center services, but were born with a developmental disability? And what would they need to provide to be assessed?
Great question. So we have individuals that come into regional center at any age. It's just they just need to meet that criteria, right? Like we mentioned earlier, the disability has to happen before age of 18. So they could be 80 years old coming into regional center for the first time. They could be 20. And, you know, they could just provide whatever information that they have. Regional center will reach out to them and let them know what additional information is needed. But at any age, they could definitely reach out to regional center and go through the intake process.
Thank you, Zoraida. And then we have another question about self-determination, and someone says how they have found very few people who have heard of self-determination. And could you please share a few sentence summary describing it?
Sure. Self-determination is an alternative service delivery. Instead of using traditional vendors to meet their needs through service delivery, the individual can work with the regional center to develop a budget, and then they're able to use their budget and spending plan to go out and hire their own staff. This program is really helpful and beneficial to individuals who might live in rural areas where populations are scarce, and then they can rely on individuals they know, they trust to provide those services. But again, it's available to all regional center clients, age 3 and up. And so, again, you don't have to live in a rural area to get it. So it is an available service model.
And speaking about availability of regional centers, someone is curious whether regional centers are only available in California or whether there are equivalent support systems in other states.
So our regional center, we're under the Department of Developmental Services specific to California. I can't speak to what other states have. I know some individuals have moved out of the state and have shared that they've had something very similar. But it's not through the main system that we have. This is specific to regional centers, are specific to the Department of Developmental Services within California.
Thanks, Sarita. Just scrolling through the questions here. So we have one question related to timelines or legal timelines for getting evaluated and served by the regional center. And sometimes there's variability perhaps in when those are being met. So I was wondering if the panelists here can talk about that and kind of what the regional center is doing to ensure timeliness in evaluation.
Sarita, you want to take that?
Sure. Sure. Okay. So yes, and unfortunately, sometimes there is delay, and there's some things that regional centers are working internally, definitely hiring more psychiatrists, more psychologists, more eligibility team members. So that is an internal problem that I think many of the regional centers have encountered in one time or another. Again, I would definitely reach out to regional center. You do have the right to file, a notice of actions against regional center, but know that we are aware when we have those situations, and we are working to hire more staff to be able to go through the intake process much, much faster.
Thank you, Sarita. And does being a regional center client automatically qualify you for Medi-Cal based on disability, or is it still case by case?
So Medi-Cal is its own entity. It's another funded program that has its own eligibility criteria. So it's very dependent from regional center. So we do have individuals that are regional center found eligible with regional center and might not be found eligible with Medi-Cal or SSI. So I really encourage you to reach out to the Medi-Cal and see if you qualify for the services.
All right. And let's see. Someone says, Colette, like you said, it would be helpful to distribute a list of regional center services. Oftentimes, families are dependent on the knowledge of the case manager or the case manager sharing that information. And many families don't always understand what those options are. So what are some ways that the regional center might work with families to remedy this?
So we have a... One of the links that we shared in our presentation is a link to services on the DDS, the Department of Developmental Services website. I would also encourage, because we know that this conference is statewide, to click on your regional center's website and see if there are links to services that are posted on their website. I know on Alta Regional, we do have that link posted.
Thanks, Michelle. And Colette, just as a parent, I'm wondering if there's anything else you want to add about what supports could be helpful to families who maybe don't know about what resources exist out there for them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the experience is often a bit of whack-a-mole. Like you have, you know about one thing and suddenly someone else tells you about something else that for years you could have been taking advantage of that you have no idea about. And I think the, that you've been struggling with and with, for no good reason struggling because there was a resource available. So having those kinds of just comprehensive lists and make them available very widely through social media, through websites, through social workers, through medical providers. I mean, just making known what is available would be great. But then bear in mind, there is a lot that is not available. And I also want to say, I see in the Q&A lots of questions about timing and lapses. And, there are only so many kind of, I appreciate the idea of notice of action or filing an appeal, but there are just only so many of those things that you can do. And I think we kind of have to get this better coordinated and organized, for developmentally disabled adults and adults with intellectual disabilities, because the anxiety is, okay, if I'm doing all of this as a parent and a caregiver, what happens when I'm not there to do it? And that's the monster under the bed, is what happens when I'm not there to do it? And I think we need to figure out how we manage that in a way that a loving, caring caregiver and family member would do it. It has to be to that standard. It has to be maximal, not minimal. That's my comment on that. And that means really getting information about everything that is available out all the time, everywhere, and making sure people know how to access it, and making sure that they know how to get it in a timely way. And and then figuring out what's not there and how we get it there. That's my view as a parent.
Thanks so much, Colette. And I know we're at time. Just want to say thank you to our panelists and thank you to the organizers for hosting this great panel. And Dr. Kripke, I'll pass it back to you.
Thank you so much, Megan. This was an amazing talk, and there's so many questions still in the chat. If you have any time to maybe answer some of those questions offline, that would be fabulous, because it sounds like there's quite a lot of interest in what you had to say. So thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.